Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
And our tech issues continued.
My God, I am so sick and tired of Audacity and everything that is happening. And I
the
don't
audacity
know.
Of
the
audacity.
Audacity that this program has. I don't understand why it doesn't work with Google Hangout, which is what we've been using for the past couple of recordings because issues. But yeah, apparently my mic and Google Hangout did not like each other and it made Audacity crash, and I didn't troubleshoot it at all. I just said, screw it. We have one last ditch effort. Let's go back to the old video thing that we use. If it doesn't work, damn it, the people are getting a podcast at the same time, but we're recording it on Friday, and now here we are.
Here we are, still recording on Thursday, but welcome to Crossbody of Work, and it is the continuation of Haas Month. That's right, more big fellas, big meaty men slap meat. It's going to be great.
Put your meat on my meat.
Meat on meat action. This week, it is Big Van Vader, one of the best Haases of the 90s, I would say. And somebody who strikes fear into people constantly. He is a terrifying man.
Someone who became a fan favorite of mine for sure because we got to watch Boy Meets World because of him. I went back, kept watching Boy Meets World. I am now on like episode 4. It's a fantastic watch. Definitely recommend it to all the people who haven't already seen it. It's on HBO Max. It's excellent.
And it is on Disney Plus. I just couldn't find it at first. So it is on Disney Plus. It is.
It's on both. So it's on Disney Plus.
Before we get into Vader's matches, we're going to plug the socials. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the good old Twitter machine at JMLO Sports. JMELO Sports. I mean, follow me if you want. Last podcast, I said don't follow me. I don't tweet ever anymore at this stage. I just retweet it. So, like, you may as well. You're better off just following the podcast at this point if you want to see
I
my
like
tweets.
The mixed messages you're giving the people. I like that. That's good. Follow me. Don't follow me. Whatever. Your choice.
Yeah, we live in a free... I'd like to think we live in a free country.
We live in a society.
It's kind of open for interpretation after that.
You can follow me on Twitter at It's Evan Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. But to follow the podcast, follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Crossbody of Work. Or email the podcast at crossbodyofworkpod@gmail.com if you have ideas for bonus apps or wrestlers we should cover. But let's crack right into Vader because it's Haas Month, baby. And we're starting with a Haas tag match from New Japan. March 1992, it is two American Haases as a tag team. It's Big Van Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow with the flames on his head against Kaiji Muto and Hiroshi Hase?
I think it's Hase.
Hase, this was a brawl.
This was fun. This was definitely fun. I am a fan of when two Haases join up together. If Bronson Reed and Big E ever somehow team up in a match, I will be the happiest man alive. I know you will definitely be the happiest man alive.
Meat. Just be meat.
Yes, those are definitely two Evan favorites. But yeah,
Did you see the tag team name for these guys, for Vader and Bigelow?
I didn't. What is it?
Big, bad, and dangerous. Simple.
I like it.
It's to the point. It's definitely to the point. Big, bad, dangerous.
It's the most Japanese thing ever. It really is.
So I was going to try to find some footage of early 90s New Japan Vader when he was a conquering beast. Like he came into New Japan and was the guy. Like he was the Gaijin. Yeah. But it's so hard to find any good footage of early 90s New Japan Vader. On the free internet, at least, I can't find it.
I mean, that's understandable, but I'm kind of happy with the selection here because, I mean, it's Haas Month. You may as well get as many Haases in a match at the same time. And
That's true.
Vader's in the match. We're putting him there with Bam Bam.
What did you think?
I liked it. It's definitely a match that... So Kaiji Muto and Hiroshi Hase were definitely two guys that were lesser in size. They're still pretty big in their own right. I mean, compared to URI, they're giants, but
they're huge.
Yeah, compared to two 300 plus pound guys who are both like over 6'5 or whatever, like they're pretty small. So yeah, it was definitely the heels were on top a lot of the match. There were some exciting little flurries, but a lot of selling from Keiji Muto.
Yes. It was a lot of domination from the big men, and then just the baby face is trying to work from underneath. There was also a lot of what felt like realistic wrestling, because a lot of it was kind of sloppy, especially by Vader. He had some real sloppy moments, I think.
I feel like if you're a big man like that, you kind of just have to have some slop in your offense. I mean, because really, if you think about it from a more realistic term, which is what New Japan is, they try to take things more realistic with their wrestling. You know, a guy like Vader isn't going to wrestle like he's Bret Hart, you know?
No, he's not going to try to grapple you to death.
Yeah, he's going
to
beat the fuck out of you. He's 350 plus pounds. Like,
and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, they just started beating. My favorite thing was very early on in the match, Bam Bam, like, does the flare flip over the ropes on an Irish whip, and then he just, like, he knocks down, I think it's Hase who's in the ring, and he just does this, he just, like, splashes, and he, like, craters the rope, the top rope down with him, because he, like, barely makes it over. It's the funniest thing.
Speaking of splashes, I want to talk about Vader's splash, because it's consistent through all of his matches. His top rope splash is super weird. He is better at a moonsault than he is a top rope splash. Because when he does the splash, his legs hit first by a noticeable margin.
Yeah, like, he's kind of just like landing on his feet and then slowly
he
kind of
does the worm. He kind of like lands on his feet and then just goes whoop and like rolls onto the guy.
I mean, the moonsault is excellent. It's a great looking moonsault.
Oh, yeah. Like, the moonsault is also from a guy who's billed at 450 pounds. It's insane athleticism.
And, you know, at some points, like, yeah, he's probably, you know, realistically somewhere between that 350-400-pound range. But, like, yeah, there were some moments here where I was like, damn, Vader, like, you couldn't have eaten a salad or something?
There are no salads in Vader world, man. Were there any particular spots you want to talk about?
Yeah, right after that Bam Bam spot, Vader completely decapitates Hase.
Yeah. Completely this match decapitates. Is like 64% lariats,
and I'm here for it. I mean, you know, it's cool because you know, there was some good like tandem offense between Vader and Bam Bam, which I think is really awesome when I see that in tag teams, especially if it's just like thrown together tag teams like these two were probably for this match. You know, if you guys can have some sort of semblance of chemistry, especially when it's two big men going out there and they're able to get some offense in. Like, especially, you know, towards the closing seconds of the match. I actually really, really like the end sequence of the match. But, yeah, I mean, as far as just, like, regular spots, I mean, like I mentioned, Muto was definitely worked on throughout the, you know, I would say the first, not even, like, half, the first, like, three quarters of the match. And
yeah.
When he gets his hot tag in, it's, like, the worst hot tag ever because Hase almost immediately gets shut down.
Yeah, because is that the one with the cartwheel elbow into the corner?
I think so, yeah.
And Bigelow just moves out of the way, and then Vader clotheslines him. And it's like, that was quick. Yeah, that lasted all of, like, 7 seconds.
Yeah, and it was cool. Like, really, it was. You know, Kaiji Muto is a guy. He's a New Japan legend. So, obviously, the crowd was going to be behind him. I don't know anything about Hiroshi Hase.
I don't either. But that's not a surprise.
I mean, Kaiji Muto is a legend in New Japan, so I can only imagine how much, you know, goodwill he's built up with the crowd at this point. And you see it. I mean, the heels are over here dishing out moonsault, they're dishing out splashes, lariats, you know, moves that would really get a crowd to pop, and they're just like not having it. They're like, no, but
the crowd will cheer for even like a single strike by the baby faces.
Yeah, like they could straight up blink at a heel and they would
be unglued. Yes, that's excellent.
They're unglued. Keep it up. But yeah, I mean they do get to a point here where I see like the coolest thing in the world. Keiji Muto hits a bridging German suplex on Vader.
That's a lot of man to move.
And I was just like, Muto is built different.
Yeah.
Muto is just
built different. If I saw Vader, I would simply German suplex him. I'm built
bridging.
Different.
It was a bridge, like a hard bridge. This was a Chad Gable-esque bridge. My God.
Impressive.
And right after that, he hits a moonsault for a near fall. And I genuinely, like, I was like, oh, my God, this is the end.
The crowd popped hard for that, too. They went unglued for that. And then, right near the end, tons of near falls. Like, a lot of attempted roll-ups and crucifix pins.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Like, they were like, this is the way we're going to beat these giant behemoths. Let's just do it.
Yeah. And then Bam Bam comes in and he takes out Muto. They hit standing splashes. So, like, Bam Bam tries to do, like, a little flipping senton on the guy, but he just, like, Bam Bam's a big dude. He can't really get the flip in as well. So it kind of just looks like he does, like, a flopping flip over the guy. Like, it's kind of like the flip I would do into the pool when I was, like, 5 years old.
Dad, watch this. Flop.
And then Vader just does, like, a regular splash because, you know, he's not fucking insane.
Let's talk about the very end sequence, because it was something. It was some big man chemistry.
Yeah, Muto gets caught on a crossbody, and he turns into a small package. And then I think Bam Bam takes out Hase at that point, and they both just, like, from opposite corners, just run straight into Muto, crush him. And then Vader hits this, like, weird kind of looking Uranage that looked like it fucking sucked to take.
I wrote down, it's like, is that a weird choke slam? But yeah, Uranage.
It kind of looked like a choke slam, but then at the end, it was a Uranage because he like had like a triangle on Muto's arm, and then he just like grabbed him and just dropped him. But yeah, whatever it was, it looked like hell because I would not have gotten up from that.
And I want to go back to the double splash because that was the meeting of the minds essentially, right? Like,
yeah,
what was it called when Gargano and Ciampa would do it?
Oh, because
they would do the kicks, right?
Yeah, they would do. They would just go. Like,
I feel like, was it called Meeting of the Minds?
I don't think it was. Unless, I mean, it might be when Ciampa would do the knee and Gargano would do the kick.
Yeah,
I have no idea, genuinely. But yeah, it was kind. I guess you could say it's the Meeting of the Minds, except for the simple fact that, you know, big men running into each other, and then there's a man in the middle.
The meeting of the minds, because there was meat.
Okay.
That's all I was getting to. That's all I wanted.
And with that.
That's all I wanted to get to. I think it was called Meeting in the Middle.
Something like that.
Yeah. Anyways, this was a lot of just, you know, big man dominance at the beginning. And it was really cool because of, you can see the differences in the Japanese style and the Japanese presentation of Vader, where, like, there's nothing redeeming about Vader.
No.
And at first I thought that was going to be exclusively a Japanese thing, but then as you go through his runs in WWF and WCW, there's really nothing redeeming about Vader as a character.
There really isn't. Like,
he's just a gigantic bully.
Yeah, who, like, legitimately stiffs people and can do some really athletic stuff for a guy of his size.
Now let's move on to a match that the ending and the rules infuriated me. And I feel like these were weird rules that you probably didn't like either.
I didn't, but it was also a cool little callback to that that Boy Meets World episode. So I was all for it.
Let's get into it. So this is now Vader and WCW, Halloween Havoc 1993. It is Vader versus Cactus Jack, aka McFoley, in a Texas death match. Now, do you know the Cactus Jack storyline with Vader around this time?
Didn't Vader, like, give him a concussion or something, like, a week before or something like that?
Back in April. So what happened Vader powerbombed Cactus Jack onto exposed concrete. They had ripped up the mat. And, they said that it gave him amnesia. In real life, it gave Foley a concussion, and he lost feeling in his foot for a while. Which, like, on the Mick Foley scale of bad things to happen is, like, a 2.
Which is, like, kind of insane to think about.
I know. The man is, I don't know how the man is held together. But they then turned into like a comedy angle where he had amnesia and did like comedy sketches about the man having, not remembering his family or his friends or like where he was supposed to be. For reference, it was voted the most disgusting promotional tactic by the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And like, yeah, because like it was really in poor taste the way that they treated the amnesia. Like, they made Jack out to look like an idiot. So,
I mean,
this was his like big comeback to get revenge on Vader, was this match. Which is weird that they would then decide the match type by spinning a wheel.
Yeah, and then it's a Texas death match, which has no rules.
No rules. Except the weirdest and dumbest rules of all time, because the rules are you have to win by pinfall. And then there's a 30-second rest period. And then you have to not beat the count of 10. Who made these rules? It doesn't make, like, if it's a last man standing, just make it a last man standing match. If it's, like, why is there a 30-second rest period? You essentially have to have the guy out for a minute.
But can you imagine if Mr. Feeney and Vader went out and actually had that Texas death match?
Feeney would win. He'd somehow hold him down. Yes, he's a brilliant man.
Before we actually get into this, we got to just talk about the fact that Harley Race is Vader's manager. Also, Vader is the NWA champion.
Yes, but this is a non-title match because apparently that isn't Cactus's motivation. Which, like, shouldn't the motivation always be the title?
Or WCW champion, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah, that should always be the motivation. I don't know. This was really weird. But it started off fun because right as soon as Vader comes out first, and as soon as Foley comes out, he just jumps right on the guy.
So they have the raised ramp, similar to AEW.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the raised ramp.
I like
love a raised ramp.
Yeah. Also, before we move into the actual match, Cactus Jack is built from Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, which is a goat billing. I love it.
What?
I just love the name. Yeah, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Real place.
Is he from, like, Long Island or something?
Yeah, he's from Long Island. But Cactus Jack is from Truth or Consequences.
I mean, they should have just had him from, like, Area 51 or something at least. Truth or Consequences, that's just, what does that even mean?
I love it. I don't get it, but it sounds great. Also, Shivani and Ventura on the call.
Ventura was bad. Ventura was real bad. And Shivani, I mean, he wasn't much better, but, like, there were some really awkward moments here.
Still working his way into being a really good play-by-play guy at this point.
Yeah, he's still making the transition. He's still more of a sports guy than he is a wrestling guy at this point, I think. But yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell there's a lot of potential there. He very much kind of rubs off on me as, like, a young Michael Cole, how he would really do well in filling in gaps when he had to, but there would just be moments of silence when the color guy just couldn't get in with him.
Oh, young Michael Cole, I feel like, had so much promise, and then he got super annoying.
Well, that's because they had him be super boring. Michael Cole is a very good commentator.
I will always point to the UK Championship Tournament, the first one, and Beast in the East.
Yes.
As two really good Michael Cole commentary performances when he's not having to shill the network constantly and is allowed to just kind of do his own thing. And then he goes on Monday Night Raw or whenever and is just insufferable.
And you know who was allowed to do his own thing? Vader, because he gets his mask taken off like 5 seconds into this thing.
Vader has the most removed mask in wrestling history.
He really does. Like, you would think. I mean, it looks pretty secure when he's wearing it. It's freaking crushing his face.
There's a lot of, like, face meat popping out of all the different holes.
Yeah, well, it's literally looking like it crushes his face. It looks like me if I tried to fit into a size too small pair of jeans.
These jeans are too skinny.
Oh, gosh. Don't even get me started. Fifth grade was a dark time. The Jonas Brothers were at the height of their popularity, and I was right there with them, and I was like, I just want a pair of skinny jeans. That was a terrible idea.
We all make mistakes. Let's talk about Vader's working punches, because they're amazing, but I think they're amazing because he just hits the guy.
Yeah, he's not working those punches. I don't know what you're talking about.
There's no pulling.
Again, Vader is a notoriously stiff worker.
The man is throwing potatoes.
Yeah, I mean, he's throwing ham hocks out there. What are you talking about? Those are not potatoes. He's throwing a watermelon at that best.
At one point, they brawl all the way up to the Halloween Havoc set. And Halloween Havoc, always great sets. You know,
yes,
like graveyards,
absolutely.
Coffins, all the thing. Really decorated by The Undertaker. Or, like, the girls that I hung out with in grade 6 who thought they were emo. You know, that kind of aesthetic. And they fall into a grave that says R.I.P. Vader. Which,
yeah,
subtlety.
I mean, it's cool.
Wrestling
never
likes subtlety.
Here's the thing. I wasn't like paying attention to the rules, so I didn't really know what was going on. So when they fell into the grave, I was like, is this just like a Buried Alive match? Did I not notice that? But then, like, Foley came out, and they weren't really counting. So
yeah.
I'm like, what? And he didn't, like, make any motion to try to bury Vader, so I was so confused. And it also wasn't even, like, really a grave. It was just, like, a hole in the entrance ramp that had a staircase on it.
Yeah, there were stairs.
And, like, I was just so confused by everything going on here. But it doesn't really matter.
And then Jack, Cactus Jack, hits a clothesline and then gets a fall. And so there's a pinfall. And in my head, I'm like, so the match is over.
No, no, no. We got to talk about this pinfall. Because, like, it looked so botched.
Yeah, it didn't look good at all.
It looked botched. Like, the referee counted three, and then, like, as soon as he hit the three count, Vader, like, puts his shoulder up, and it's like,
yeah.
Foley looked kind of confused. It was more, I think it was botched. I really do, and then they just went with it.
So then there's a 30-second rest period for some reason.
Foley's busted up at this point, we should also mention. And then
a 10 count that you have to answer, and Vader easily gets up by the count of 10 because he had 30 seconds of rest after a botched pin to get up.
Yeah, and then Foley grabs a fake cactus and just drills him with it.
That must have been like Mitch's grandfather.
And then a couple of seconds later, I don't know, Vader's like off of the ramp, like right next to the crowd, and then Foley hits the patented Cactus Jack elbow drop off the whatever.
Always sweet, yeah.
It looked good. It looked like it sucked if you were Vader, because
yep.
Foley's a big boy. He gets the three count on that, so Foley's up 2-0 like 5 minutes into the match.
In terms of pinfalls, but that doesn't matter. It's all about the getting up at the count of 10, and Vader gets up at like a 3 or 4.
Yes. And then they fight into the crowd, and Vader throws Foley over the railing. And I'm not sure if you were paying attention, but that was a sickening thud.
Yeah, it was just he just dumped him. But also, Jack tried to sunset flip over the railing onto Vader and comes up short and just landed in front of Vader. And Vader's like, huh, all right.
Word. Bang.
I'll just throw you back in. Before that, they threw the oldest, moldiest, dustiest, busted-ass table into the ring. Like, they couldn't find a new table to use for this. They're like, hey, we have this table from when Bruno was here in 1971. You want to use that table? And they're like, that works fine. I'm surprised it didn't disintegrate on contact.
Yeah, Vern Gagne was using this like 20 years ago. So
Carl Gotch built this table with his own hands. This is nonsense.
And then they go to turn the camera to Harley Race, and Harley Race is like messing around with a taser, and he keeps turning it on and turning it off, and they're like, what is that? What is this thing that he has in his hand? It's like, you could see that it's very clearly a taser.
You can see the taser very clearly.
You can see the electricity flowing through, too. It's like, it's so obviously a taser.
It's wild. Vader ends up in the ring with Jack, and he hits a moonsault, looks great, gets the three count.
Yes.
Cactus Jack gets back up, because that's the way this match goes. So weird.
And then Vader drops Foley, because Foley, like, is basically piggyback riding on him on the ramp.
Oh, this was so good.
Vader just falls back. It looked like it sucked for both of them, but Foley was crushed underneath a 400-pound man and fucking metal.
Have you seen the clip from ECW where Taz has the Kamehameha on Bam Bam and they break the ring?
I haven't.
So it was I'm pretty sure it was Bam Bam and Taz. Taz has him in like the chokehold, the Taz mission, and Bam Bam just like does the same move where he drops to his back and they actually fall into the ring. And it was like the finish of either a show or a pay-per-view. And in my head, I'm like, wow, ECW's construction is shit compared to WCW, because these two guys did the same spot and weigh a combined much more than Taz and Bam Bam. And that ramp, totally fine.
Well, that ramp is made of metal is the issue. Like, you could hear it when Foley hit like the thud. Like, they talked about some ribs being popped. I was like, yeah, some ribs are more than popped. They're broken. And it's something broke in that spot. I don't know what it was, but something broke.
I will now confirm it was Bam Bam versus Taz, Living Dangerously, 1998 ECW World Television Championship match. They break the ring.
Okay.
So they got this spot from they saw Vader not break the ring. They're like, we can do that and bust through the ring. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Can we talk about the garbage finish? Because the finish is garbage. I don't like it. It hurts my feelings. There's a three count for Vader on the ramp after swinging a chair at Jack like a baseball bat, and then a DDT. So Jack gets up after the pinfall, but during the 30-second rest period, and DDT'd Vader on the chair, and both men are down. And then Jack's on his way up during the 10 count, and that taser we talked about earlier, Harley Race uses it on Jack to keep him down. Now, here's what I don't understand. During the 30-second rest period, Cactus Jack clearly got up.
But he wasn't up there in the 10-second period.
It doesn't make any sense.
But Evan, he wasn't up there in the 10-second count.
These are the dumbest rules I've ever
it's
heard.
It's the 10-count that matters, damn it.
Apparently, Vader wins through Harley Race tasing Cactus Jack. It didn't make any sense. It hurt my feelings. I didn't love it. I love the brutality. This is like lauded as one of the most brutal WCW matches of all time.
Oh, yeah. No, this is... I mean, they weren't a company that was known for a lot of their more hardcore, even just like vicious-looking things. So to see something like this, where you've got a guy like Foley, who just doesn't care about his health at all, and nope. Vader, who doesn't mind hurting people... going out there and just going balls to the ball with it. It was really entertaining, like 20-25 minutes.
I think Vader truly relishes in hurting people.
I don't think he notices. I could genuinely fair. Tell, like, he's like, genuinely whatever. Just feels like the guy who just doesn't know his own strength. So when he's going out there and he's laying it on punches, it's like, I don't know how to throw them any softer.
What do you mean I have to not hit them? Why?
It's like, what do you mean work a punch? I'm punching them and I'm working.
Yeah, this is my job. I'm at work. I don't get it. So that was a really weird match. When we get back from this quick commercial break, we're going to look at another title match, this time against Ric Flair. Back from the break, we're looking at a title versus career match from Starrcade 1993. It is Vader's WCW title against Ric Flair's career. Now, this is 1993. And if you are familiar, Ric Flair retired in 2008. Yes. No spoilers on who wins this match, but it's Ric Flair.
Yeah, that was my first note was I kind of hate that I know the finish already just because I know that Flair doesn't retire in 93.
But the fact that in 93 it was realistic for Flair to be retiring.
Is kind of scary.
Is kind of wild because then he wrestles another 15 years.
Yeah, and like... what was it, like 11 years after this match is when he has that crazy IC title ladder match with Edge.
Yeah, the man had more left in the tank.
He had a lot more left in the tank, especially in the hardcore elements of things. But the fans were very behind Ric Flair in this match.
This show takes place in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ric Flair is from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
The cheers are deafening during the intro. You can't hear the introduction pretty much because it's just people going absolutely bananas for Ric Flair.
Yeah. Which I don't get the hometown thing as much, especially for like heels. Because, like, all right, when Sasha Banks was a heel and would come to Boston, like, why are we cheering for her?
Because people like when people come from where they come from.
Now, Oney Lorcan, I will cheer, like, nonstop. I love Oney Lorcan, but...
we are very simple creatures. We're like, I know that place! Yeah!
What wrestlers come from your neck of the woods?
From Southern... like, Toronto? Edge? Christian?
Well, not Toronto. You're, like, two hours
from North
away
Bay?
From Toronto.
Nobody.
Exactly.
Nobody!
Exactly.
I feel like I just disrespected our local wrestling promotion. I'm sorry, Northland. If you want to hire me to be a manager, I will gladly do it. I'll be your ring announcer. I'll take bumps.
I'll be your GM from America.
It's me, your American general manager.
I'll be the heel GM.
Oh, you would be a babyface GM. I would be a heel GM.
Whoa. Why do you get to be the heel? I'm American.
That's true. That would get you heat here. Yeah. What? You know what? You're right. Yeah. That would easily get you heat here.
Yeah. You're short. You're lovable.
Sure. I'll take that. I'll take that backhanded compliment. Anyways. On to Flair versus Vader. They also talk about how at the first Starrcade, this is the 10th anniversary of Starrcade, which is always my bone to pick with WrestleMania 25. Which they said was the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania, but it wasn't.
No.
The 24th anniversary, WrestleMania 26 would be the 25th, whatever. This is truly the 10th anniversary of Starrcade. And in the first Starrcade, Ric Flair faced Harley Race, who was again out there with Vader, and Flair won the title that night, or kept the title. And it's kind of weird that 10 years later, Flair is in the same position, you know, in the title match at Starrcade. He just really hasn't moved from the top of the company.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about it on commentary. 83, he wins the title. He walks out with the title. 84, yeah. He walks out with the title. 85, he walks out with the title. 86, he walks out with the title. 88, he walks out with the title. 89, I don't remember what it was. I think he might have walked out with the title then. I think 90. I
mean, odds are.
90, wasn't that the Sting match?
I don't remember.
Somewhere along there was a Sting match, I'm pretty sure. He might have walked out with the title then. Who knows? But, like, it's crazy to think, like, we're 10 years in, and, like, more than half of them have ended with Ric Flair walking out the title as a heel. So to see him coming in as a babyface, you know, they were like, we're not entirely sure what his chances are, but, you know, based on his history, he's kind of the favorite here. And it's weird because they really built up, like, usually in these matches, it's like, Flair's going to get demolished, you know, in the babyface role. The babyface is going to get murdered. Look at Vader. He's heel run. He's been champion for a while. But they're really building up Flair, the babyface, as like, oh, yeah, actually, he's the favorite in this match.
Yeah. What are some spots you liked?
So something I liked about the match that was really weird, it took me off guard, and like I was not comfortable with the whole match, was usually in a big man, little man match, the little man's kind of like the speed guy.
Yeah.
It was so weird seeing Ric Flair play the speed role, because in any Ric Flair match ever, he's the slow guy.
Like, we've seen Steamboat run circles around Flair.
We've seen Dusty speed up a match against Flair.
And yet to see Flair be the one who has to kind of stick a move and get away from Vader. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he has to get away from Vader. Vader's gigantic. The man is a mountain.
Yeah,
so he had to be the one to play that role. But yeah, it's super weird to see Flair in that role.
Yeah, I mean, my one note here before Flair is able to have some sort of spark is just Vader is killing the man, because he is just clubbing Flair with blows. Flair is running into him and getting knocked down. Like, there is a lot of selling from Ric Flair, which is a good thing, because Ric Flair is one of the best sellers of all time, if not the best seller of all time. So to see him really, you know, go out there and just start flopping for the guy is awesome. But it's funny, because you see points where Flair is like chopping and punching and chopping and punching, and Flair works his stuff. He's not the guy who's gonna chop you and then like leave a mark. You know, he's a guy who'll chop you for the sound and, you know, try to leave it as clean as possible, because he's not a fighter. He's a worker. Vader is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
So it's a nice little dichotomy there.
Polar opposite.
So, yeah, you know, you saw points where Flair was bleeding from the mouth. You know, there wasn't a lot of color on Ric Flair here, which kind of shocks me.
Rare for a big Flair match.
Because Ric Flair wakes up, brushes his teeth, and he's got blood trickling down his forehead.
Yeah, 100%. One thing I really liked was Vader is an excellent in-ring talker, which is something we've talked about on the pod before. His trash talk is so simple. Like, I'm going to beat you. And it's like, yeah, I believe it, you terrifying monster of a man. Like, that man could say anything. He could have been reciting nursery rhymes, and I would have been like, that's horrifying. Because he, one, has a very intimidating voice, and two, is triple the size of your average human being. So, you know, he can say whatever he wants, but I like that he's constant with it. Like, as he's, you know, laying these clubbing forearms into Flair, he's just talking about how badly he's going to beat Flair, and how Flair can't stand up to him, Flair can't take it. It builds up sympathy for Flair, which isn't a natural state for Flair to get sympathy. It's not his default. Yeah. So it's really cool that Vader's able to kind of do that to help build up Flair. Obviously, Flair's going to be huge in Charlotte, but it builds it up for the people at home, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, Flair was really the underdog for a lot of it, and so he wasn't anymore.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And that's a thing. When the match really flips, it's not really Flair that gets the advantage on Vader. It's Vader who just kind of takes himself out. Like, there will be times where he runs into the barricade, and then, you know, Flair assists him into running into the ring post, or, like, you know, Vader will miss a dive or something, which he did a lot. He misses a lot of dives and splashes.
He misses at least one moonsault and at least one Vader bomb. Yeah.
He misses, I think he misses like two Vader bombs throughout the match, and it's a lot of stuff. But yeah, it was really cool because I like it when that happens. I don't like the babyface getting a little fire spot, and that's how they get on top of the monster heel. I like the monster heel to be taking themselves out. Like if Mustafa Ali is fighting Braun Strowman, Mustafa can't just like super kick him and then Braun's stunned. You know, it's got to be like Braun freaking got hit by a train and then Mustafa's able to do some stuff.
What about when Kalisto beat Strowman in that dumpster match?
We don't talk about that match. We don't talk about that thing.
One thing that I thought was very funny was the fact that Flair went up to the top rope three times in a row and connected every single time.
I know, that was weird.
It's like alternate universe where Flair is a high flyer. I didn't understand.
He's the speed guy. That's another thing. It just made me so uncomfortable. But there was a flying clothesline from Vader at one point. I don't remember when it was. I think it was actually what caused Flair to have the bloody mouth. That just looked like it sucked. It didn't really look good.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, when Flair turns it on, then he starts working the leg and just teasing that he's going to start working the leg made the crowd explode.
Oh, yeah, they were going nuts. He just picked up Vader's foot, and that was enough.
Yeah, and, you know, he teased the figure four. Obviously, all he did was drag him to the rope, lay the leg on the rope, and then he, like, sat on it. But, man, just the tease of the figure four made everyone come like, it was just crazy. Like, Flair was the most over babyface I'd seen throughout most of these podcast episodes. I mean, anyone... Like, the pops that he were getting here were only rivaled by Stone Cold Steve Austin, who, you know.
He's Stone Cold.
Yeah.
At one point, we're going to get into the finish a little bit. Flair goes for a cover, and then Harley Race decides to get involved with a diving headbutt. That's what he decides is his big move that he's going to use to take out Flair. Flair gets out of the way, diving headbutt instead onto Vader, and then the ref pushes Harley Race out of the ring.
Yeah.
That is a bold move for that referee, because Harley Race is terrifying.
Harley Race, legit badass.
Absolute legit badass.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was one of those things I like that. I like that aspect of it where, you know, you can't really do... you can't really end a match on a DQ. Like, the ref is like, we're not ending this on a DQ. I know Harley Race got involved, but fuck it. You know, we're going to keep going. We need a decisive ending to this match.
We need a winner, yeah.
Because it's how do you end a title versus career match with a DQ? You don't.
You can't.
You can't do that. They need a decisive finisher. So, yeah, gets Harley Race right out of there. But that leads us to
Flair with one of the weirdest pins I've seen, from Flair especially.
Yeah, it does. It leads to a really – it's really cool, though.
Go into it.
Yeah, so Flair, you know, Vader rebounds off the ropes. Flair hits him with like a chop block, and then he just leverages the chop block so that Vader is able to fall, and then he rotates a little, and he just gets a little roll up from the chop block, and that's it. That's all it takes for the three count.
And we get a huge celly in Charlotte because Ric Flair is world champion again. Space Mountain is open. Everyone rejoice.
I mean, I guess.
I guess. We're skipping over his Vader's time in the UWF, a little bit of a New Japan run, and his Camp Cornette stuff in WWF to move to 1997. It is In Your House 13, also known as In Your House Final Four. It is a four corners elimination match for the vacant WWF Championship. Vader, Bret Hart, Undertaker, Stone Cold. This match is right after Shawn Michaels, quote, lost his smile, end quote, and hurt his knee and had to vacate the title. So these four are deciding
who is... Did he face Sid that night?
What's that?
I thought he faced Sid on that card.
No, this is right after Mike... Like, the reason
he faced
Sid
at Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
There it was. That's what it was.
Yeah. So this is also the final pay-per-view before WrestleMania 13. So this leads into Sid versus Undertaker and Austin versus Hart, and Vader would be kind of the odd man left out there and end up in a tag title bout on the match or on the card.
That's disappointing. It really is.
Match, not disappointing.
No, this match was excellent. I love this match. This is absolutely, I think it's the best Fatal 4-Way ever, as far, not even just WWE history, just any company. Honestly, I couldn't think of a better one. I love this match.
The match that I'm thinking of in WWE doesn't have the same star power, but Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, Miz, IC Championship.
That was a great match, but there's just something about this match that just every single element to it just worked for me. Like the fact that The Undertaker doesn't have to play the monster and he kind of just has free, you know, he just kind of has the freedom to just go out there and freestyle it a bit, and he does, and it's honestly awesome.
It's almost like a little preview a couple years, well, like 10 years ahead of Wrestling Machine Taker, because he doesn't have to be just the monster. He just gets to kind of wrestle.
Yeah, I mean, Stone Cold is, he's heel Austin, but he's still definitely the Texas Rattlesnake. And I mean, anytime I could see a Stone Cold match, I love Stone Cold. And this was the best version of Bret Hart. 1997 is the best year for Bret Hart. He just is. He figures it out, all everything from a performing standpoint to character stuff. He's still a baby face at this point. We will get to that at WrestleMania 13, and we will get to that on this podcast, subtle tease.
Yeah, you're right. Also, of note, Paul Bearer is out there, but he's not with The Undertaker.
No.
He's with Vader, because he turned on Taker in 1996 to align with Mankind, who would actually be Vader's tag team partner at WrestleMania. It would be Vader and Mankind versus Owen Hart and Bulldog.
For 3 years after murdering each other.
Yeah,
After murdering each other.
The way that the world comes around. Yeah. Let's talk about one early spot in particular, which is Undertaker booting a chair into Vader's face and making one side of his face look like minced meat.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. It looked really freaking bad.
Vader looks like Two-Face. Like, he looks fucked up.
Yeah. And then, like, almost right after that, Austin counters a sleeper hold with a jawbreaker that, you know, kind of looked like a stutter to me.
Jim Ross calls it a modified stunner on commentary.
Yeah, it looked very good. It literally just looked like the original version of the Stone Cold Stunner, where, you know, before the boot and the really over-dramatic thing, when he would just grab the guy and drop him. It looked nice. And then we get a vicious choke slam from The Undertaker on Vader. That just, like, that was big. Like, Vader got some height on that. I'll give him his props. He got some height on that. And Taker, there, to be able to, you know, help him out there to get him up. They really got him up. I mean, I think he cleared Taker completely, like, head over head, which is a lot, because considering The Undertaker is 7 feet tall.
Yeah. It was a big leap. Can we also talk about Austin and Vader beating each other up literally on top of the timekeeper?
Wait, right before that, we have to talk about what might legitimately be the worst Stone Cold Stunner of all time.
Okay, get into it.
What was that, Undertaker? What was that?
Who takes the worst stunner?
Okay, I'm going to discount, like, we're putting the McMahons off. They don't count.
Oh, because I wanted it to be Linda.
Linda's not a wrestler. Like,
true.
Like, she's...
Oh. Donald Trump. Donald Trump takes the worst fucking stunner of all time.
Okay, wrestlers.
Oh, I can't tell. I can't remember. It might be Kane. I can't remember. It might be Kane taking a stunner.
Kane's taking a cup. It doesn't look good.
I think tall wrestlers in general have trouble taking the stunner.
Well, you just got to have to bend over. I mean, Scott Hall disproved that with his ability to take it. Scott Hall's a big dude.
Scott Hall's is legendary.
He's like 6'8". I mean, he's about the same height as, you know, he's a couple inches shorter, but he's roughly around the same height as Taker and Kane. You know, I don't know, man. I think it's easier, if anything, for a tall guy, because, you know, all you got to do is just bend over, and then you just pop up. That's, I don't know, true. It just didn't look good for The Undertaker here. He kind of just crumbled on it. He didn't go down with Austin, so it literally looked like Austin was actually just dragging him down. I mean, he lost his balance and just fell and collapsed. It was just bad.
It wasn't pretty. But yeah, then Austin and Vader literally fight on top of the timekeeper. And my only note was, poor guy. Like, Vader, one, is bleeding profusely from the face.
Well, my note was, I mean, we were robbed of an awesome program between Austin and Vader. Can you imagine a match between those two?
The punches. Austin just constantly bouncing off the ropes, trying to loot Des press him, and Vader just standing his ground.
Just the punches alone, because Austin was a notoriously stiff puncher. Vader is obviously
just digressed into a brawl.
Yeah, I mean, it would just, I mean, to be fair, most of Austin's matches pretty much progressed into brawls, which is good because I like brawling in wrestling.
At one point, I wrote, there is literally too much action to keep up with. I know. What hard-hitting journalism and analysis I have. But yeah. I was just like, there's so much happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got Vader missing a moonsault on Taker because Paul Bearer, like, told him, hey, go for a moonsault instead of the Vader bomb.
Yeah, he's like, go all the way up and go for a moonsault. Nobody home. Bad yeah. advice, Paul.
And then Taker just chokes Vader with some cables after that. Then we get my favorite spot of the match. Bret Hart just absolutely punting the ever-loving crap out of Vader's nuts.
Yeah. He's from the Pat McAfee school of kicking. Because we were recording this the day after Pat McAfee just tried to actually punt Adam Cole into orbit.
Yeah, that was a devastating looking punt.
That's a great kick.
And then we get our first elimination. Which
is also, eliminations in this match occur by being tossed over the top rope, similar to the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. So Bret just like, pretty much like fireman carries Austin on his shoulders and just like dumps him out.
You Austin? Know the way that people always hold each other near the ropes in the Royal Rumble? Where they're just kind of like pretending and like, oh, struggle. That style of elimination, but it actually happens.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because this comes like a month or two after the Austin gets dumped but comes back in because none of the refs saw it, and I'm dumping Bret out to win the Royal Rumble.
Which then leads, of course, to their amazing match at WrestleMania 13.
Yes, which is, in my opinion, the second greatest wrestling match of all time. We covered the first one on this podcast. Go listen to the Shawn Michaels podcast.
Vader then takes his mask off, which, again, happens all the time, and he is covered in blood, and gets a nice stretch of dominating. For a little bit, Vader is in control.
Yeah, for a good while there, Vader is in control. Bret hits a superplex on him that had like a nice little thick thud on the way down. Oh, my God. Like, you could tell that ring was just crying.
Absolutely.
The ring was crying. And then Bret puts Vader in a sharpshooter, and Taker breaks it up.
Also, can we talk about the weakest urn shot I've ever seen?
Go ahead.
Paul Bearer hits Undertaker with, like, a gentle tap upon the noggin to be like, you're still my son. I don't want to hurt you. You're still my child. So
boy.
He wants to disrupt him, but just like a little like, dink, like that's it.
Yeah, I mean it was
really great. Not selling out for that one.
It just wasn't great. But yeah, Austin comes back in and he wants to beat Bret's ass. Vader goes for a Vader bomb, but Taker sits up, uppercuts his balls. Not a great day for Vader's ball sack.
No.
And Vader falls out of the ring. That is how Vader gets eliminated.
He just crumbles under the nut pressure and falls out of the ring. Just crumbling under nut pressure.
He eats an uppercut to the balls and gets dumped out. What a way to go out.
What a way to go. And
most
so
realistic.
Final two, Undertaker and Hart. And Austin, of course, has made his way back out and had beaten the crap out of Hart at this point.
Yeah, so Taker choke slams Bret, and then he sets up for the tombstone. But as he has Bret on his shoulders to really, you know, he hasn't flipped him over to get it done yet, Austin pulls him out and he messes it up, and Taker goes to punch Austin, and then Bret rolls him up for a near fall. And then the finish happens, which is Bret knocks Austin off the apron. Then he ducks Undertaker, and him on the rebound just... Bret just clotheslines him right over the ropes, and he gets to be the WWF champion.
But he doesn't take the belt into WrestleMania 13.
He does not. The Undertaker somehow... I don't remember what happens.
I don't remember what happens either. I know that we end up with an Undertaker versus Sid WrestleMania main event. I know that.
I think what happened was he had a match with Sid... Didn't he?
Yeah, Sid was challenging whoever won this match. They said
yeah, and
Raw.
I think Sid won it off of Bret because of Austin. And then that's how they set up both of those matches.
Fair enough. This was an excellent match. This was the most action-packed match, I think, of all of them.
Yeah.
And if I were to suggest people to watch one of the matches, it would be this one, mainly just for the star power. Like, these are four of the best, especially this era. Like, just fantastic overall presentation and the match, and it's all great. And if you want to see, like you mentioned, peak Bret Hart, this is the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we've got Austin, who's awesome. Taker, who... Again, he's not in the monster role, so he just goes out there and just does awesome big man things, and it just looks really cool.
We're going to take our last commercial break. When we get back, we're going to attempt to watch a Vader promo. Back from the break. Now, Vader is not a promo guy. We know this. He was with Jim Cornette. He was with Harley Race. He was often with a mouthpiece. So when you try to find a standout Vader promo, you can't.
Honestly, for the promo here, I'm just going to let you go on it. Because I feel like you have more opinions on this thing than I do.
I don't have opinions on the promo. I have opinions on the end of the clip. And I'll talk about that in a second. So it's literally just somebody recording this promo. It's from another In Your House that happens a little later after Final Four. And it's going to be Vader and the Patriot versus Bret Hart and another Hart Foundation member. I don't remember who. Probably Jim or Owen. Somebody.
One of them.
And Vader's big line is, "We don't like big mouth Canadians." Okay. Now, there are so very few big mouth Canadians. Right? There's like Bieber, Bret Hart,
Ryan
and
Reynolds,
Don Cherry. And like, that's it. Those are the big mouth Canadians. Who else?
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, but Ryan Reynolds is like a positive big mouth Canadian.
Okay. Well, All right. Well, he's still got a big mouth.
That is true. If we're talking just people who have a big mouth, Chris Jericho, that's a big mouth Canadian.
Yeah.
Me, that's a big mouth Canadian. So on behalf of big mouth Canadians, I am offended. All right? I am furious. So I guess my question is, are you sharing the same opinion as Vader and the Patriot about big mouth Canadians, Javier?
I don't care about Good. Big mouth Canadians. I mean, Chris Jericho.
That Jericho's- is the right answer.
Chris Jericho is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, mostly because of his promo work. You're obviously my co-host on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't salvage the podcast.
While I would love to throw you under the bus, I can't do that because, you know, in hurting you, I'm also hurting Chris Jericho, and I can't do that.
I am also short enough to fit under the bus, so it would do nothing. It would do nothing to me.
Fine, I guess Volkswagen or something.
Here is the biggest revelation of all in this clip. Is then Vader and the Patriot make their entrance. Did you hear the music?
Da, 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 da. Yeah, the Patriot had Kurt Angle's theme.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I genuinely had no idea. So I started to lose my mind because this is, at least two years ahead of Kurt Angle coming to WWF?
Yeah.
And I love Kurt Angle. That has been established on the podcast. So I proceeded to lose my shit.
You didn't know that?
No, I genuinely didn't know that. And then the Patriot came out, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I was so disappointed because it wasn't Kurt. Yeah, the promo's fine. Vader's a better in-ring talker than he is an actual promo guy, and that's why he was always with somebody to hype up how big he was and sell him, right? Paul Bearer, Jim Cornette, Harley Race. He always had somebody.
Yeah, and a guy like that shouldn't be talking anyways. He could be the best talker in wrestling history. Looking the way he looks, he should have a manager no matter what.
Always. Let's get into the final match for Big Van Vader, and it is a trip back to All Japan Pro Wrestling now. So we're back in Japan. And it is January 15th, 1999, Vader versus Kenta Kobashi, who I, again, know very little about. Do you
Kenta
know much
Kobashi
about Kenta?
This is the first Kenta Kobashi match I'd ever seen. He's one of those guys who I've been meaning to go back and give a watch to, because he is genuinely a legend in Japan. Like, he is, like, he's up there. It's Inoki, it's Fujiwara Ri, I always mess up his name. And you know, Kenta Kobashi is one of, honestly, if you think, you know, regardless of promotion, of who the five, you know, most influential Japanese wrestlers are, Kenta Kobashi, I would say, is definitely in the discussion for that list.
When they present him in this, he is presented as an absolute star.
Yeah,
fans go
he is
bananas, and I believe he's like either the, he's like the cornerstone of all Japan, right?
Yeah, he's definitely one of their, if not their top guy, he's one of their top guys.
And then when Vader is presented, he's booed because Vader, the common denominator of all of these Vader matches, Vader is booed wherever he goes. What a hard life that must be.
What a hard life to be such a big man.
Because you can't hide. You're always going to be noticeable as Vader.
Yeah.
And like, if you want to keep kayfabe alive, you have to be a dick all of the time.
Yeah, and that sucks. I mean,
that hurts, man.
Yeah, I mean, he dealt with it like a champ. The guy from you know, by all accounts, he was a good guy outside of the ring. He was a pretty soft-spoken dude as well. But yeah, you know, I always like that in wrestling when guys just are able to like flip that switch and they become like something else. Like, you know, Daniel Bryan is a soft-spoken guy. He's a nice guy, but when he's out there, it's like fire. Like he is fire.
Finn Balor, by what everything I see on his social media, is like an eco-conscious nerd by all accounts, and yet when he gets in the ring he can just like go.
Yeah,
like he's just Finn.
Just
yeah.
He's a demon.
Yeah. Also, Adam Cole strikes me as the same way, and same with Cesaro. Guys who like, and I think part of it is that now we have more
I don't know, Cesaro doesn't really, Cesaro just remind, like if you look at the Celtic Warrior workouts, Big Dick Tony is definitely, like, I don't know why he's not playing that character on TV.
Cesaro, though, I think what it is we have so much access to them in their off time now through social media and things like that, that we're able to kind of see these other aspects of their personality. Cesaro is always calm. He always strikes me as somebody who's just, like, he's very, like, put together.
He's so European, him, is the thing. Yeah,
that's part of it. He's very, like, reserved. And then to see him out on the ring just, like, he can unleash at any time, and that's kind of what I meant. Is that like there's that comparison?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Let's talk about the match. What are some things you liked?
Kobashi just starts beating ass. This was definitely the more, I would say, babyface friendly of the matches that we've seen.
This is the most you see Vader sell.
Yeah, Vader is selling. Like, I mean, there's a lot of it of selling. I would say the offense in this match was honestly like 55-45 in favor of Vader. Like, it was really pretty even. It's, you know, Vader is on top, I would say, for the majority, or for more time than Kobashi is. But yeah, I mean, this is a 20-25 minute match, and yeah, I'd say roughly 9-10 minutes of it is Kobashi on offense, which is good, because
especially early on, he slaps the mask right off of Vader's head, pretty much,
which is awesome. That was so cool.
I like that a lot.
And you know, it's really just him going off on Vader until Vader just hits him and he crumbles.
Yeah, like he truly just collapses.
One shot and he just collapses. Like, it's, and then some stiff shots to the body right after that. Well, that look like they just suck.
And a very hard powerbomb on the outside by Vader.
And then the flimsiest chair to ever be used in a chair shot ever.
I like when he picked up the three chairs that were together. He like picked up a row of bus seats. He was like, oh shit, I don't need this many. And then grabbed one. Was like, hey, there we go. This is the one I need. And yeah, the chair folded like origami. Like, just
it was
right away.
Like, the seat was so tiny and the legs were so long. Tiny. It was like, it just did work. There was barely a back on it.
And meanwhile, there's probably people who are Japanese fans being like, yeah, like, that's what a chair is supposed to look like. And we're like, oh, our chairs are wide.
Oh, we in America are fat.
We invented the Baconator and the Double Down from KFC. Like,
I'm Dominican. No. We're born with big butts, okay? That just does, it wouldn't work for me.
I'm big bound. There's one point where the ref actually gets involved. Like, props to the ref for actually trying to like stop Vader from using the chair, because like I don't want to stop Vader from doing anything. That man can do whatever he wants.
I mean, if I'm a ref, I'm definitely, listen, if I were a referee, I'm going full Aubrey Edwards. You know, I'm going full, like, I'll push you if you even look at me wrong. I don't care.
I do like Ref Aubrey for that.
Yeah, I mean, the red shoes is awesome. I love her red shoes. Best ref ever. You know, I'm not going to name a specific someone here because I hate him so much and he's not on this episode.
You know who was good? Mike Chiodo.
Mike Chiodo's great.
Mike Chiodo's always good at being like, no.
He's a great finger pointer.
Yes, you don't do that.
Yes, but we get a great call.
Let's keep going.
Lariato. I love it when the Japanese say lariat because they add the extra O and they made, you know, it just reminds me of Mr. Lariato on Twitter, who's one of my favorite follows. I don't know if he's still around or not.
I haven't seen him in a long
time. He gets his account suspended like every other week.
Yeah, because he's too busy making awesome gifts for us.
Yes, we love him. Shout out to him. But yeah, we get an awesome looking DDT from Kobashi. Like it looks so cool. And then just all of the chops, just all of them.
So many chops. Also, Kobashi is the first person we've really seen slam Vader, and he does it repeatedly.
The suplex. Oh my God, the suplex
is
like
strong.
It was a delayed suplex. He like held him up there for like 3 seconds and then dropped back, which is insane to me. I mean, again, like for someone to be able to hold Vader, like it's one thing if you're hitting like a snap suplex on Vader, because like the Vader could, you know, he can just probably jump and rotate for you and you don't have that much of a stress on you. But for something like that, where it was like pretty much 90% of the strength had to be on Kobashi's part, because he really did delay it a bit on the way down. My God.
Impressive. Also impressive. Vader, where have you been hiding this awesome release German suplex, baby?
Like, yes.
We don't see it in any other match. And then he hits him like, that was beautiful.
Yeah, when he just like runs right into him and then he just flips him right back into the suplex. Yeah, that was awesome. And then we really start getting into the sort of end sequence of the match, which is, you know, Vader... hits a Vader bomb, he connects, but instead of going for the cover, he goes for a second one.
He goes for two.
But he hits it.
Hits it again, and Kobashi kicks out again.
Kobashi kicks out, and the crowd went crazy. Absolutely crazy. And Vader just hits a big splash from the middle rope, just a normal splash. Just landing on the guy normally. And this was the one where I'm okay with you calling out the middle splash. Because he landed right on his feet. And then just fell right onto the guy. And he won. Vader wins with that.
Which was weird. Because like two moonsaults, no. One weird splash, yes? Question mark?
Yeah. And it's, correction, wasn't a moonsault. Two Vader bombs.
Yes, my apologies. Two Vader bombs.
And that's... that's it. It was a weird ending to me. I was not expecting that. I was like, did they just mess it up? Then surely there's going to be more time. But then I looked at the time and there was only like a minute and a half left in the video. So I was like, oh, damn, this is actually the end of the match.
I guess that's it. And that also brings us to the end of the pod. Vader time. We kind of powered through Vader time, but honestly, this is my takeaway from a lot of the Vader matches. Vader is a little one-dimensional, and I know that that's not a bad thing because the man is... something that you can't teach in wrestling. He's gigantic. Yeah. But a lot of his matches started to bleed into the same style. Honestly, the big variations are the last two matches. It's the Fatal 4-Way because of the amount of guys in the match and the level of talent. And the fact that in the Kobashi match, there's more Kobashi getting offense in. There's a little bit more variation there. The first three matches, they follow a very similar pattern.
Yes.
So it's not surprising that like some of these matches look the same. And maybe we're missing out on like a really quality Vader match. And if we are, you should hit us up on Twitter and tell us, because we'll gladly go watch more Vader content. But a little similar, still an impressive fella.
Yeah, I mean, again, Vader is one of those guys who, you know, he really was the full definition of a monster heel. You know, he was a really good hand to go out there, and if you want to put a title on him, you can put a title on him and it's believable. If you want to make a baby face, he's definitely a guy you can make a baby face on. I mean, you put him in a match against Mick Foley and Mick Foley's gonna look like hell incarnate, but you know, obviously Vader comes out of it at the end. You put him in there against a guy like Ric Flair, and I know he's in Charlotte, North Carolina and all that jazz, but you know, Ric Flair is a baby face and that match I think works anywhere, just the way that the story was really being told. And obviously, I mean, if you just think about the match, all of the matches that we saw here, like Vader was really good at making the babyface get a reaction. Which I think is that's a skill in its own right. It's something that is really hard to do, especially in wrestling nowadays.
babyfaces can't exist without good heels to challenge and conquer.
I mean, you saw the reaction to Flair, the reaction to Kenta Kobashi was deafening at some points. You know, it really was awesome. And he's a guy who, he was doing things that big men even today still can't really do. He really played a style that kind of is of a bygone era. But, you know, if you see a guy like Vader come along today and start hitting moonsaults, you know, start doing all of this stuff, you know, you'd be really impressed with it. But just like take it back to 25, 30 years ago, and the guy was busting all of this stuff out at a time where psychology was really the big root of wrestling. And I say he had that as well. I mean, the guy just had all the aspects down other than the talking. And I just think he was the perfect monster heel for the time.
And he truly didn't need to talk.
Yeah, really
never needed to talk.
I mean, big mouth Canadians, you know?
These damn big mouth Canadians. That is going to wrap up this week's podcast. Before we get into our typical show notes, want to give a shout out to Dez from Talkamania, who just became a father. Today, recording, he tweeted it out, had a baby girl, baby Kyrie. Hope everybody is well. Big shout out to the Talkamania crew. Growing by one. That's awesome news.
That's awesome. Big shout out to Dez. Big shout out to Kyrie. And, you know, we hope everything's good with the family. And I'm really happy for you guys.
And, you know, big shout out to J-Bomb just because, you know, got to throw J-Bomb in there too.
I guess.
In our typical show note fashion, where we bring to light some causes that we think you should know about, I think everyone has seen the horrific devastation that leveled Beirut, Lebanon recently.
Yes.
And so this week in the show notes, there are links for the Lebanese Red Cross, as well as the United Nations World Food Program, which provides food to those in need in Lebanon. The port of Beirut, from what I've seen, brought in about 80% of the food and medicine required for Lebanon. So it's a huge blow with the fact that it was devastated the way it was. If you have the ability to donate, donate. If you have the ability to share, share. That's it for Vader. We'll be back at it next week with Mark Henry. More of Haas.
Yes.
Haas month continues.
Haas
Very
month rolls
Haas
on.
Month. Haas month rolls on. Javier, any last words for the people?
Just Black Lives Matter and keep fighting the good fight, everyone.
We'll see you next week.